Welcome back, WNST, Towson Baltimore. And Baltimore Positive, we are positively into the post-bye season. Luke is out in Owings Mills covering all things Ravens, getting you ready for the Vikings and then the Dolphins and then the Bears. I have abstained from going to Miami next week on short notice with my back injury, but the Maryland Crab Cake Tour presented by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. Let yourself play. We're going to be back out at Silver Spring Mining this Thursday, and then on Friday at the Chop Tank. We are at Fadley's next Wednesday. Big guest for that. And then next Friday back at Nick's Grandstand Grill. I'm doing some make goods. I haven't had a crab cake in a month. I don't know how long it's been for this guy. This guy used to live around here. I've been knowing this guy since last century. He has gone to Minnesota, where he's made a life covering football and the Vikings and the National Football League. Kevin Seifert has been my friend. When did you and I meet? Did we meet at like Camden Yards? Is it cool that I put this up? Is that true?
Absolutely. It's bringing me back. I don't know if I ever had that great view of it, but that's a great shot. Yeah, my first year, probably the first Orioles game I covered was like 94, 95, somewhere around there.
And you were what paper?
The Washington Times. So that was even before the Nationals were in town. So the Orioles were quote unquote DC's team. And so the DC papers covered the Orioles every day.
The young kids have no idea what this is all about, what it's like to live in Baltimore and have Redskins games piped in every week, you know?
I know. It is. That part's wild, too. I think, when did the Ravens – the Ravens came when I was still in the D.C. area, but, the Expos didn't move until long after I left.
Kev, I called you because we're playing the Vikings this week, and I watched the Vikings play on Sunday night, and, I'm chasing Paul Allen, you, some of my bunkies around, and, and some of my Minnesota friends, Rod Simons, the late great. We've lost people along the way that used to be certain. But you cover the league, and I'll get to the Vikings, and we could talk about Lamar and what's going on the field, but you're one of the guys that knows how the sausage is made, and you see me at various owners' meetings in Palm Springs or the Biltmore. More Super Bowl weeks. I made my Super Bowl reservations this weekend out in LA. Don't even know whether it's mask, unmask, whatever. Yeah. 27 Super Bowls, and all bets are off here at this point. But I know one thing. I started thinking about LA and Inglewood and what's going on, and I saw what happened last week, and Seth Wickersham has the new book out, one of your colleagues. Mm-hmm. I had him on 2 weeks ago talking about Belichick and Brady. But the story of the minutes that happened last week in an owner's meeting where, and you and I have been there, where they get tapped, Dick Cass gets tapped on the shoulder and asked to leave because Bisciotti's in the room. Right. In this case, Bisciotti wasn't in the room. But for Stan Kroenke to get up after all that's happened in St. Louis, for the league to be getting its ass kicked in court, which is kind of unprecedented, and which really speaks that laws they broke in the state of Missouri and how pissed off the people there are, and they're going to play the Super Bowl in L.A., give me some perspective on your end of what an audience, not what they would want to know, what they need to know about just how filthy all this is when 650,000 emails come out and they put a hit on Mark Davis internally, to put a hit on John Gruden, to besmirch Bruce Allen, to protect Daniel Snyder. There's just a whole lot of politics going on. And I think for most fans, just betting on the games is hard enough, you know?
Yeah. And I guess my first reaction when I saw Seth's story is that here we are in the situation you just described, where the Washington football team, the emails, has really risen to a national level, to the point where the congressional committee wants, oversight committee wants answers, and potentially is going to have people testify in Congress about it. And here were the owners in their owners only a meeting arguing about legal fees from leaving St. Louis to go to Los Angeles. I mean, I'm not saying that that's not an important issue to the league, but it just seemed like so perfect that with all these like really important social issues and cultural issues and perception issues going on with the league right now, that this was the sort of the most animating part of the meeting for them, which was an attempt by an owner apparently to get out of paying legal fees for his departure from St. Louis to go to Los Angeles, where he could make even more money.
Yeah, gave you stadium and $1 rent for Alex. Yeah. I've done my part, right?
Yeah, and I guess part of his argument is that there were at one point two different proposals to go to Los Angeles, and one was in Carson, and one was the one that eventually got built. And the one in Carson did some research, and part of the proposal suggested that if the stadium that eventually got built was built for the Rams, that there, it would violate the NFL's relocation policy. And so that was one of the Carson arguments for having it in Carson. And so then during this court process, the people in St. Louis got a hold of that argument and that research and basically using it against the NFL to say, hey, you broke your own relocation policies based on what the people in Carson said. So that's,
well, Kevin, I lived through it here, right? I was at the paper from 1984 to 1992. Herb Belgrad crab cake, every movement to not steal a team and do it the right way. When Rankin Smith would vote for us, and Jim Irsay had to vote for us, and Leonard Tose was all in for us, and whatever. It harkens back to all of that. And how Baltimore hated the NFL, but always wanted a team. And now St. Louis is in this position. And I was in St. Louis 3 weeks ago. It's where I hurt my back at a Stones concert.
Oh, geez.
And I was there, and they were all baseballed up. The reason the Stones were playing there is because they lost the football team and the stadium was available to play.
Yeah.
And Howard Balzer came on right when the team was taken. And that happened really quickly. I mean, you may have been covering those meetings down in Houston. They all went to the meetings, and it was Carson, Carson, Carson. And then Jerry got up and pulled it out. And the next thing you know, the Rams are leaving St. Louis, and everybody's scrambling, and everybody's pissed off. And this has really been quite it's been sloppy, right?
Yeah.
By their standards, for as many lawyers as they have, this was very sloppy, all of it.
And like Baltimore, St. Louis was a really good football town. I mean, it wasn't a place that had just basically decided we're not going to build a stadium, and so we don't care whether we have an NFL team. They really wanted an NFL team. They were trying and spent a lot of money to try to figure out a way to reconfigure their current stadium, or where could they build. And I think the undercurrent was always that no matter what they came up with to keep the Rams, that Kroenke wanted to move them to LA because there was just a market there where he could make more money no matter what the St. Louis situation was. And so I think part of what's driving, you know, St. Louis, to really stick it to the NFL is that they spent a lot of money and really went to the max of what they, as that market, could do to try to keep them when it will turn out that the wall was stacked against them regardless. And
the fix was in, right?
I mean, yeah, the fix was in. And then they showed, you know, then the XFL came a couple years later, and they were drawing like 35,000-40,000 people to an XFL game. And that was just like the first couple weeks of this. By the end of the year, they probably would have been selling out, according to the people I talked to who were working in that St. Louis franchise for the XFL. So they're a football town. When the Rams left, attendance at high school football games in St. Louis went way up because they needed an outlet for it. And so that's part of what's driving them too, is that it wasn't like they were just this, you know, wasteland of that, not caring whether football occurred or not. And the NFL underestimated them probably at every step, and just assumed that they would be able to steamroll it. And to this point, they have not been able to, and they're put themselves in a position where they're going to have to, there's already been a lot of depositions, and there's going to be potentially more made public through the legal process if they aren't able to figure out a way to settle this lawsuit.
Kevin Seifert joining us here from Minnesota and the worldwide leader. You can follow him. I've been following him for almost 30 years now and covering the football thing, covering the Vikings out there. The Vikings are coming in. Before we go Vikings, and you know, I could go down the whole road of blackball and, you know, end racism on the back of helmets. And then there's John Gruden, who was given up by the email gods and the congressional emails. And the former Washington football team, as you pointed out, you were in the Washington market at one point. I still follow Tommy Love out on Facebook and putting stuff up about Dan Snyder. Look, man, you covered Angelos here, and I have Camden Yards behind me if you're watching out on the YouTube and out on our Baltimore Positive video channel. I got thrown out 15 years ago. I love to say I was right. I would love to say I was wrong, and Angelos turned out to be okay. But the people that are scumbags, you know, the Donald Sterlings of the world, and how quickly the league got rid of Jerry Richardson. Mm-hmm. And the fact that you know, the groin rubs are okay for Robert Kraft, and, you know, and screwing people's okay for Jimmy Haslam and all of that. I watched the games this weekend. They were putting owners on throughout the league on all the television sets, talking about what wonderful families they all are and how Mr. Haslam's just a misunderstood Browns owner on his 12th coach in 6 years or whatever the hell it is. They're trying to, deodorize this ownership situation. It's 32 people. They all got in a room. They all made these decisions. They, you know, Rodgers making $64 million a year. No accident. That was reported this year, this week. And it's an us versus them. And as media members, and you're a lifer in this, doing the job has not gotten easier. And the murkiness and the depths that which they will go through to keep a partner of the ilk of Daniel Snyder around them to protect him, I find it to be like with the Angelos Nationals thing. If Bud would have sacked up and had the bigger stones and just said, screw you, we're putting the team there, take us to court, that would all be over with by now. They would have had him out of the club, paid him off, somebody else would own the Orioles, and the Orioles would be averaging 2.7 million people and winning 87 games a year or whatever, right? And the Nationals could be fine too. But instead, they tippy-toe into this. They're fighting with Al Davis's kid 50 years later instead of getting rid of him. It feels to me like the opposite would be true, that get rid of the cancer. Adam Silver thinks that way in the NBA. Instead of flipping around in the second decade with Daniel Snyder or the third decade with Peter Angelos, because it feels like it never gets better with those guys, really.
Yeah, I mean, I guess from the NFL's, my assumption of what the NFL owner's perspective is the last thing they want to do, and we can debate whether this is healthy or not, is set up a precedent to take someone's franchise away from them for something that's less than, a violent crime, or I don't even want to put it that way. I guess something less than something so egregious that they're not going to be legally capable of,
I wonder
of run,
what that
running
list
their
is,
franchise.
Like the George Carlin seven things you can't
to be
do
one of
when
the
you're
seven,
an owner, you know?
The seven words you can't say on TV, they'd have to say one of those. And, you know, even the Jerry Richardson thing, like he did that, you know, there might have been some pressure, but he ultimately made the decision to sell the team on his own. And it was very quickly after those allegations came out that he did it. Would any NFL owner try to talk Dan Snyder out of selling the team if he wanted to do that? I don't think so.
Well, you've met him. Nope. He thinks he's going to die with the team, right? Like, thing with Angelos. Like, Angelos was never, ever, this is an asset that's not for sale. Yeah. I will die with it.
And so, they wouldn't talk him out of it, but like, nobody, they know that he doesn't want to sell it and isn't going to sell it. And so that will probably happen. You know, it'll, I would imagine that barring something that prevents him legally from operating or being present at the franchise, that he will continue to own it. And there's been times in when I've covered the NFL where owners have not considered the possibility that something that they advocated for could eventually turn around and bite them. And then it's happened. You look at the different owners who have pushed investigations into the Patriots, for example. Well, some other teams have been investigated too. New Orleans being one of them with Bounty Gate. We've seen some other ones as well where they ended up getting outcomes that were probably just as unfair, or they thought was just as unfair as what the Patriots thought was for them for the Deflategate. So there's been times when they've been naive or oblivious to the fact that it could eventually turn on them. But I think that they, by perception, they've clearly drawn the line at investigations into owners that would lead to any meddling in the ownership of the franchise. There might be a short term removal. You know, you put your wife in there, you put your kids in there, as the Colts did with Jim Irsay, but not requiring them to sell the asset. And so that, you know, whether we like that or not, or whether we think that's the right thing to do or not, they're a private business, and that's how they've chosen to run it. And we can, you know, as media members or fans, can render judgment accordingly and can decide whether you want to do business with them as a result or decide any of those things. But I don't see the owners getting together and deciding to come up with a precedent or a structure that would allow someone to be removed from ownership for something that they have not been legally convicted of.
Well, I mean, they're too big to fail, right? And I think more than that, Congress is the only one with the kind of oversight to say, you're not going to do this systemically to women.
Yeah. Yeah,
in your organization and sweep it under the rug,
or at least make them pull it out from under the rug. Like the interesting thing about what's happening with the Congress is that the NFL, like, they put out a very sanitized statement about what the investigation found. There was no written thing; they just had a verbal, report given to Roger Goodell. And there's no details from any of the interviews. We don't know any of the things that happened. So in their attempt to try to keep that quiet, eventually those people are not, potentially going to have the opportunity to testify those details before Congress. So instead of kind of managing the release in a way that would give enough details to satisfy people that they knew what would happen, they've now opened themselves up to people testifying under oath in front of Congress to provide those same details they refused to give up in the first place.
Kevin Seifert is here. You can follow him out on Twitter and the worldwide leader at ESPN. He is out in Minnesota. And you don't like traditionally cover the Vikings. You cover the league and league issues, but you are in Minnesota. So I did reach you. Boy, the Vikings stunk the other night, didn't they? I mean, wow. I mean, and the Ravens stunk 2 weeks ago against the Bengals. I mean, the one thing I've gotten from sitting around, and we've played so many Monday night, Sunday night odd games so far that I've watched a lot of football. I've watched a lot of Red Zone. Not traveling with the team this year because, like, there's no locker room. Like, what's the point? Harbaugh doesn't want to answer any questions. I went out to Las Vegas. He had a press conference for no one. It was like a Howard Beale thing. Zrebeck sitting there, and Jameson and I are trapped in the elevator in Las Vegas.
Oh, no.
And by the time we get to the press conference, there is no press conference. And I'm thinking, I went through Albuquerque last night to have a 5-minute press conference. Like, that's where we are.
I know this isn't your point, but I have nightmares about that exact scenario, like from when I was a beat writer, of getting stuck in elevators and not being able to make the press conference.
Well, ask Jameson. He'll be glad to tell you about the night he and I spent running through the air, like O.J. Simpson through the airport underneath the Las Vegas stadium, not knowing where we are, and having a pissed off John Harbaugh jet out with a mask on. And I said, I flew 14 hours to come here, and my wife spent $212 for a ticket on the roof.
Yeah.
And so I'm getting old and I'm getting cranky. And you've done this, and I'm even crankier. I mean, the owners disappeared the last 3 years. There's no more asking the owner questions. The former PR guy's off golfing in South Carolina, and the current PR guy has not a clue. And so the league for me, I'm watching it on TV. And so for me, the league on TV is better than ever, bigger than ever, gambling for everybody, which I find amazing after the Bengals-Jets game turns on, one shoulder going down. I'm thinking, you can bet on this. It's a
very flimsy call,
So I watch it all. None of these teams are great. There's no great team at all. And you could say, well, I wouldn't want to see Tom Brady in January, and I wouldn't want to see Patrick Mahomes. Fine, but the Ravens can be in L.A. Anybody can be there. It's really a wide-open season, and the league loves it this way.
Yeah, they do. And it really has been. And that's what's been amazing about all the things we talked about before, is that all those things have happened in the context of this unbelievable season of close games. And, there's been a record number of games that have come down to the wire, and record number of overtimes through the first 8 weeks, and just a ton of really good games. There's a few more really, really bad teams than there usually are. I mean, and we're seeing more blowouts than we normally do, too. But in terms of the overall product, it's been a great season so far on the field, and the NFL just has to make sure it doesn't get itself doesn't get in the way of that too much.
You cover the league and on the field and off the field, and on the field, the Lamar factor, right? Like Lamar comes in, nobody believes in him. Nobody's going to turn their whole franchise over to drafting different linemen, overvaluing Nick Boyle and Willie Snead in their offense, right?
Yeah.
It's such a different way the Ravens have gone about this, and they've had market success, right? I mean, like, but there's January and there's throwing the football. And when I talk to serious people like you, everyone says, got to see Lamar do it from 10 points down in January in Buffalo through the air in order to believe. And yeah. I think there is a part of that, that was the same standard that Elway, Peyton Manning, Dan Marino, those guys that didn't win, that came close, Cam Newton, pick anybody you want. If you don't win in January, and Tom Brady's the only one that ever does every year, seemingly, yeah. and he's 4-4, at some point other people will win. Where are you on Lamar and on what the Ravens, Harbaugh called it revolution a couple of years ago?
I
haven't heard that.
Yeah, I think he's awesome, and I think he's as good as he is on his very best days. And I'm not worried yet about the fact that they haven't, you know, at age, what is he, 25, 26, that he hasn't won a bunch of playoff games or hasn't taken them to a Super Bowl win. I mean, that, you know, the while there are a lot of quarterbacks who have success, and while Patrick Mahomes is always going to be Patrick Mahomes in terms of how much he has done young in his career, like historically quarterbacks, the progression of quarterbacks is even the very best ones that's come out of the gate the way he has. It's not that historically they don't go out and win Super Bowls in their early 20s. I mean, that's something that takes longer. If he gets to age 30,
he's 24. Just
20, yeah, 24. Okay.
He turns 25 on January 7th.
Okay, so he's not. I guess 26, 25. Yeah, but yeah,
I got socks older than him. I might be wearing.
Yeah, exactly. So, and this is not making excuses because I mean, again, we've seen a precedent set by Patrick Mahomes, but that was a historically anomalous thing to happen in the first place for someone like him to win a Super Bowl and get to another one at that young age. Like if we're writing off Lamar Jackson because he hasn't won a bunch of playoff games and or a Super Bowl at, as you say, at before he turns 25, then what are we doing? And so like, I have full anticipation that what we've seen in the regular season will eventually translate to playoff wins and a run into a Super Bowl, as long as the team around him stays as competitive as it is. But like just the idea of saying, well, it's just, this is what his ceiling is at that age. And I know that some people are doing that because of the assumption that a quarterback who wins, you know, a percentage of games based on his running ability is by definition going to slow down because of injuries and age and quarterback, you know, whether it's, you know, you look at RG3 or Cam Newton.
They're doomed. I would say eventually what happened to Jameis Winston's going to happen to him. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, and it's going to be ugly day when he's making $50 million a year and that happens.
Yeah. But Jameis Winston, was never like, I don't think he was in his best days ever as good as Lamar Jackson has already been. But I'm saying
getting broken, broken in half at that position, which we saw happen to everyone, literally.
Yeah.
Michael Vick, Steve Grogan.
Right. And like in more recent times, like Cam Newton, like he never had like a catastrophic injury that would slow him down. Like I was covering Dante Culpepper when he was hit in the leg and tore all three ligaments in his knee and
Bridgewater.
Was never the same. Yeah, Bridgewater, same thing. Like that injury never happened to him. You know, some of the other quarterbacks that we've seen over time, RG3 did have the knee injury, and so I guess we can
Tom
partially
Brady
say
had
that.
One. Carson Palmer had one. But, Joe Flacco had one.
But
right?
People, what I'm saying is that the ones that like quote unquote make their living as runners, you don't have to have a catastrophic injury, and over time, you're not going to be as an effective runner. Same way, running backs aren't the same as quite as effective as they get older either. I mean, that's so like.
You want one? Latavius Murray, Devontae Freeman, Le'Veon Bell. They all look like they're running in quicksand.
Yeah. So I can see why people would say like Lamar Jackson's, you know, ceiling is lower because he's not going to be the same runner at age 29 that he is at age 24. But that also, you know, I think we've seen plenty in the passing game to suggest that that can continue to develop over time. And that, you know, to the extent that he does slow down as a runner, that can be overtaken by improvement as a passer.
Kevin Seifert covers all things National Football League for the worldwide leader. He's out in Minnesota, which is why I reached to him this week. It's always good to visit with you, man. How's life in Minnesota? Give me a little Minnesota primer post-plague other than just cold.
You know, it's not, it's been actually a really nice fall. You know, we had the stadium, when they've had home games there, it's been warm enough that the roof doesn't open, but the doors, they have these big, huge glass doors that stay open, when it's nice out. And so it's almost like a carport sometimes. And so like those doors have been open. It's been nice enough to do that. Nobody's complained about the cold in the stadium. And so we're motoring along. The Vikings, the funny thing is, they played a terrible game on Sunday night, but Kirk Cousins has been the least of their problems up until that Sunday night game. He's actually had a really good season, probably his best season up until that Sunday night game.
Well, it helps when your running back picks up the blitz on the backside and then gets you blown up too. So
yes, that happened a few times. But you know, their real issue, and I'm sure the Ravens are zeroing in on this, is that their defense has just not been the same Mike Zimmer defense for a couple of years. And they've had some personnel problems. Danielle Hunter is out this week. You know, he's probably out for the year. They're really good outside pass rusher. And so I think Ravens fans will be surprised to see the descent of the Vikings defense. If they hadn't been paying attention up until now, when that game comes up, there's definitely going to be opportunities for the Ravens offense to move the ball.
All right, man. Well, I'll be reading. You'll be writing. At some point, we'll get together with all these billionaires and watch them fight with each other off season sometime at the Biltmore or whatever, right?
Sounds good, man. Appreciate it.
Kevin Seifert, you can follow him at Seifert ESPN. You can follow him at the worldwide leader anywhere the National Football League is. And, I'll try to reach back to you weeks when we're not just playing the Vikings, or when I get out to Target Field for one of those cheeseburgers where they put all the cheese in the middle of the burger.
It's Juicy delicious. Lucy.
Juicy Lucy. Got to get back out to the Twin Cities. Appreciate Kevin joining us. The Maryland Crab Cake Tour, they eat walleye and sturgeon and other stuff like that up there. It's coming to you. We're back on the road this week. We're going to be at Silver Spring Mining Company on Thursday, and then on Friday at the Chop Tank in Fells Point. Lots of great guests. Fadley's next Wednesday, and then next Friday at Nick's Grandstand Grill up in Timonium. And Mayor Brandon Scott joining us at Coco's in Lauraville on the 17th. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking Baltimore positive.